Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 337, the first episode of 2016. Happy New Year's, everybody. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, stroll on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a great first episode of the year we have for you. Let's introduce our guest. Michaela Mendelson is a transgender activist, public speaker, and businesswoman with over 40 years of entrepreneurial leadership experience. She founded the California Transgender Workplace Program to promote trans-friendly job conditions and passionately advocates for trans women in the workplace through her work with the California Restaurant Association. She has worked as a consultant on Orange Is the New Black in the development of Laverne Cox's character. She was the keynote speaker at the Transgender Employment Empowerment Conference, and she's spoken to hundreds and hundreds of groups on oh so many LGBT-related topics. Her autobiographical play, Making Michaela, was produced by the Celebration Theater as a staged reading and will be developed into a full production in early 2016. And she recently accepted a post on the board of The Trevor Project and thus becomes the first trans woman on that board. So much to talk about. Michaela, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you, Ken. It's really my pleasure. You made me feel so old when you said over 40 years of leadership experience.
You started when you were 4, Michaela. That's the important piece of that story.
Oh, thank you for clarifying.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too, Kim.
Did you have a lovely New Year?
My partner and I and our 2-year-old ran off to Santa Barbara for a few days and went to the zoo and went to a wonderful party given for trans youth there, and it was just a great weekend.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah. Well, we have so much to discuss. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. Now, I feel like over the 7+ years of the show, we don't have a lot of people from that wonderful world of business on our show, which, as I understand it, is a really time-consuming world. At what point did you say, okay, I'm in the business world, but I need to devote my time to activism as well?
Well, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I just felt like, you know, transitioning was like starting a second life for me. And I've been living as a woman for about 8 years now.
Yeah.
And took me the first few years to really come into myself, because after having lived so long in one gender, though your mind tells you this is going to be easy because now you're going to be who you really are. I played the role so well for 50 years of being a macho male that it took me a few years to really integrate every part of myself and really feel, you know, settled.
Yeah.
And after that, my life just took off. I mean, I just felt like there was so much I wanted to accomplish, and I'm doing so many things that I just dreamed about before.
Oh, so fantastic. Now, what little I know about the business world, I'm in that crazy world of academia. What little I know about the business world, not super great for women. And then I have to imagine complicating that further, maybe not the best for trans women.
Well, at the time I originally transitioned, I had 500 employees, and I hid out for a year because I was worried about, you know, what people would think and all. And then I showed up a year later at our yearly Christmas party in front of everybody and their families and reintroduced myself. And
wow,
it's actually been a great experience. Of course, when you're the boss, you don't have to worry too much about being fired. So.
Right. There is that. There is that. Wait, you supervised? You had 500 people under you?
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I'm so, so fortunate to have great management people working for me that makes it so much easier than it sounds.
I want Michaela's free tips to management. Give me a good tip, because I have to tell you, I left the world of administration because I had 14, 15 people, and I don't think I was a very good supervisor, Michaela.
Well, directly under me was a small team, bookkeeping and financial administration, and two people at that time that that ran the stores and the general managers of the stores and everyone else worked under them. I would visit the stores, but the people who worked in the stores really didn't directly report to me. So I only had maybe a dozen people directly reporting to me.
I want Michaela's patented tip for being a better leader. Tell me that better leader tip. I think you have it.
Well, hire the best people you can find and always treat them right. But hire people who know how to treat other people right. And I think that it's all about people enjoying what they do. You're going to get, you know, the most from them, and everybody's going to feel better.
Fantastic. Fantastic. At a Christmas party, you had your debut.
We have a yearly Christmas function where we have the big dance contest and prizes, and everybody brings homemade food. And we have entertainment. And I showed up, and nobody knew who I was except just like three people in my company who I'd confided in that I was getting everything done through during the year of my transition. And it was, I was nervous as heck, of course, but it was very exciting, and the response I got was really wonderful. And now when I walk into my restaurants, a whole different feeling than before. I feel like people, you know, my employees gather to me because it just seems to be a certain respect now and just the openness of what I did and how I shared it with them. It's just changed my relationship with my day-to-day, you know, store level employees.
So inspiring. So inspiring. Tell me about the California Transgender Workplace Program. That strikes me as a critical program there in California.
Hopefully it will be critical. It's in its early stages. I've got a few coalition partners who want to join up with me. LA LGBT Center, their transgender program, and the Trans Latina Coalition, the Trevor Project, the Santa Barbara Trans Youth Project, and they're bringing a few other people. And where our mission is to make California truly trans friendly workplace state and a model for the rest of the country, and then hopefully move it from there out. This idea came to me 4 years ago when my first trans employee came to work for me who was hired by one of my general managers, and I felt that, you know, I needed to get out there and meet her, and sat down with her. She told me my story that she'd been working at and I won't mention the chain on the air, another fast food chain where she clearly identified as a woman, but she was forced to use the men's restroom, and she was sexually molested in the men's restroom.
Wow.
And then they told her, well, you can use the women's restroom, but only if... since it's had three stalls, if no one else is in there. Well, one day she went in, another woman followed her, and then came out and complained to her husband, someone in the bathroom that might be a man, and the husband put his foot down, you've got to fire this person or else we're going to make sure no one comes to your store. She was fired. That chain could have been sued for $100 million for breaking California law, but it was over a year later that the girl came to me. And so it was passed the statute. But that started me on the road of thinking that even though California has great laws for protection that were actually passed all the way back in the Gray Davis governor days, most companies don't know about it and or just don't follow it. And so there's still a lot of work to be done.
A lot of work. A lot of work. Now, you've done so many speaking gigs. What is it that you are trying to accomplish when you, Michaela, get up there in front of a group of folks? What is it that you are hoping to do generally?
Well, it depends on the group. I speak a lot at schools, everywhere from middle schools through high schools, community colleges, universities, graduate schools. And I speak at medical schools. I'm a regular speaker at the Museum of Tolerance. And they're bringing a lot of varied groups to do all-day programs with them. So it depends on who I'm talking to. I'll give an example. Most recently, I talked at the Museum of Tolerance to a group of about 60 administrators from Sonoma County, which is Northern California, and school administrators who, and this is a great opportunity to speak to people like that because they're going to have an influence over thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah.
And kids that are maybe going through tough times in school being bullied. And so they're a wonderful group, and they just, You know, they kept me there for hours, and they had to push everything else back because they just wanted, there was so much they wanted to learn about how to deal with these kinds of things with their with kids in school. And so, you know, having that opportunity, those kinds of opportunities is absolutely wonderful. And then when I speak to school kids themselves, you know, it's just to get through to them, you know, so often they haven't met someone or don't realize they know someone who's transgender. And to have someone in front of them speaking their story and making it personal, I hope opens hearts and minds. And then I talk to them about how they should treat their friends that might come out to them and how to be a safe space.
I'm going to call you out on that because you're saying hopefully, and I am guaranteeing right this very second that you've had at least one, even though I think it's probably a lot more, experience after you spoke where someone came up to you and said something.
Yeah, it happens. It happens often, and I hear a lot of stories. Just recently, I spoke at a college, and two women came up to me right after. One told me about her. Just started crying and told me about her trans friend who had when she was growing up in Hawaii, and then she wished she could help her more because she committed suicide. And then there was another one that came up to me and told me about how her niece was this wonderful trans girl who the whole family was very supportive of, and she was very happy and out, and her boyfriend murdered her.
Wow.
In a fit of probably transphobia. You know, these things can be so internalized that sometimes we don't realize it. And so just to have a chance to touch people like that and young people now, I'm getting a chance to talk to kids 5 years and up. It's just amazing to me. It just touches me so much.
Incredible. Again, listeners, we're here with Michaela Mendelson, activist, public speaker, businesswoman. Talk to me about this connection between you and Orange is the New Black. How did that come about?
Well, that was kind of out of the blue. I wasn't doing consulting I had consulted on a play. It's interesting that people, you know, someone through someone else comes to me. But it was a friend of mine who was a known writer, and he was hired to write for the show. And Jenji Cohen approached him if he knew someone who could help in that regard, and that this is an important role in the show. And so I spent a number of hours at the studios meeting with her and her writers, and then there was one writer assigned to the backstory, and I spent some time with her on the phone a few times, and that was really exciting for me. As I told Jenji, I don't expect to get any credit, I don't expect to get any money. I'm doing this because I'd love to see you get it right, and by the way, you'll do whatever you want, but if you can hire a trans actress, you're going to do everybody such a favor. And I'm so excited that they did, and that the woman they hired has made such a difference.
Huge difference. So Orange is the New Black, Laverne Cox's character, gets your stamp of approval?
Oh, yeah. She's been a great representative and spokeswoman for our industry, for our community.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Now, I would imagine it must have been a slightly surreal experience for you, even though you wrote Making Michaela. Seeing it as a staged reading had to have been a little bit surreal for you.
Yeah, you know, it's the writing of it and rewriting of it is painful yet cathartic.
Yeah.
And to see it played out, yeah, it was exciting, and done very well. There were two stage readings, and we're not going into production with it this year because the Celebration Theater was interested in doing some work on doing workshops on it. For a rewrite into a play, but into a production. I felt I had to put it on the shelf for now. It's kind of a grandiose project for me compared to the other projects I have where I can help so many people or hope to, that hopefully I'll get it off the shelf at some point later.
Absolutely.
This year and get a writer and director attached to it because I think it should go through one more rewrite.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of other projects, how about the Trevor Project, which we have not talked about in far too long since we had the executive director on our show. For those who don't know about the Trevor Project, tell our listeners about the Trevor Project.
Well, the Trevor Project is the only nationally recognized crisis suicide hotline for LGBTQ youth from the ages of 13 to 24. And its mission is to eradicate youth suicide and in this community, and to work towards eradicating the triggers that cause it. So they do a lot of great work in advocacy, and they've got Trevor Hotline, they've got Trevor Chat, Trevor Space, which is a phone group and an online group. And basically, you know, they're just giving kids safe places to talk about their issues and to work through them. I mean, it's just, it's a difficult world there. I went through so much bullying as a child.
Sure.
And did have an episode where I had flirted with suicide myself. I just, you know, understand the importance and of saving kids' lives and making their lives better. And the Trevor Project does such great work. I'm just so impressed. I've only been with them for several months, and just everything I do, I get more and more impressed.
Now, here in Cleveland, I am the president of a board of a local nonprofit. I would say that with my board members, I have the people who, you know, kind of come to meetings, and then I have the people who really do the work. It is my understanding that you are getting your hands dirty here and doing the work.
Oh, well, my friends kind of call me a boots-on-the-ground activist.
Yeah.
Because I just like to get out there and really try and help people without, you know, just talking about it. So as much as I can, it's what fills me up. I've joined three committees, and I'm also joined their Southern Initiative, too, because that's where they're getting a good percentage of their calls now from the South because of the strong cultural religious issues there. And I'm hoping to go out there and start doing some public speaking as well. But I may have to do some self-defense classes before I do that.
Yeah. Well, can we drill down in that a bit more? So you're focusing your attention on this part of the country that perhaps doesn't have the best reputation for being LGBT friendly. How do you approach that in a different way than if you are in Santa Barbara?
Well, I don't know yet because I haven't been down there yet to speak. There's a board member named Dr. Laura Embry for Trevor Project who is working with the Children's Hospital to open a trans clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. And initially, she has a list of churches that she works with that are starting to open their doors to gay and lesbian involvement in the church. But they are still prohibiting trans involvement in their church, because they feel that trans people, that God makes no mistakes, so trans people must be possessed by a demon or the devil.
Wow, yeah.
So I just feel like whenever, I kind of feel responsibility because I've led a life that's just, I guess, traditionally, you know, so responsible with raised 3 children, now a 4th, and built successful businesses and been such a member of my community, and that, you know, before I transition, that to stand in front of them and to talk to them and for them to understand who I am, it just becomes harder to label someone a demon when they get to know them personally.
Absolutely. Any trepidations about going down there? Or you're ready to go?
I don't know. I guess maybe it was how much I was bullied as a kid, and and having worked through that, I just, every time there's a challenge in my life now, I have a hard time resisting it, especially when it's important to do something important.
Yeah.
And no, I'm raring to go. I just know I'll have to take certain precautions because there's people that I love that love me that, you know, I have responsibilities. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, a topic that has come up over and over on our show over the years is the representation of transgender individuals on various different boards. And so very exciting to see you on the board of the Trevor Project. What do we think about all of these other boards that just don't seem to have solid trans representation?
First of all, I'm not that knowledgeable in that, knowing that there isn't that kind of representation. So, rather than my, you know, get down on any of the people that are involved, I'd rather speak positively about.
Please, yeah.
Just that it's something that's just brings a lot more to the table. I think it's, you know, it's only in the last year or two that there's been an explosion through to shows like Orange is the New Black and Transparent, and Caitlyn Jenner coming out and things like that that have made this kind of the year or two of trans. And so this is a new opportunity for a lot of these groups to look at it and say, you know, we can get on board and gain from it. It wasn't for the Trevor Project. It wasn't that they weren't focusing on trans. They're now getting, as a percentage, a greater and greater number of calls that are trans related.
Yeah.
And they've done a lot of work in the trans area, and have other people working from them on their staff that are trans, but they just never had someone on the board. So I feel a responsibility to bring them, a sense of the community of so they can understand more and more about the needs of the community, but they're already out there doing that too.
Absolutely. Such a great organization. It's my understanding you will, in a few weeks, be doing the 40-hour crisis training.
Oh, okay, yeah. Did I tell you about that? You just...
I know
so
stuff.
Much.
I know stuff. It's not my first rodeo, Michaela. I know
I
these things.
I guess I can. last weekend in January and first weekend in February, I'm going to do the crisis training. I think it's really important to understand what they do and how it helps people. You know, it's like when I first started in the restaurant business, even though I opened a restaurant myself. I had worked in restaurants for 7-8 years, but this particular chain that I got into, I worked doing everything in the restaurant for weeks, learning all the different positions first. I mean, you just don't understand the big picture until you understand the little picture.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like one of those undercover bosses. I feel like you're going in and then people get nervous, but then they're doing a really good job and everybody's happy in the end.
Yeah, I like people to be a little nervous when I walk in, but more so I want them to be, you know, happy that I'm taking an interest, so.
Okay, it sounds good. Yeah, no, that is so important. I've seen just on so many different boards where people are not actually doing the work. You know, they don't understand, well, this is what the organization actually does. And so that's going to be a 40-hour crisis training. That's, I don't know that I could do that, Michaela.
Well, then I don't know that I'll be able to go on a regular schedule, but I'm going to want to be taking calls on their crisis line because, for one thing, it just makes me happy to be able to really talk to people like that one-on-one. But the other is, you know, it's just helps me understand how important Trevor is and, you know, what our goals are.
Absolutely. What can our listeners do to help the Trevor Project reach its goals?
Well, I think help get the word out I assume you have a lot of LGBTQ listeners.
Absolutely.
And just to continually help get the word out, especially when they hear that, you know, about kids that are having a hard time and that they should know there's a place for them to talk, a place to go. And maybe keep a Trevor, read up on Trevor a little bit, have maybe a card or a brochure handy to give out to friends. Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do. The other group I talk very highly about is PFLAG.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to the families, the parents, see, Trevor is for the kids, but, you know, kids of LGBT families that don't support them are 8 times more likely to commit suicide.
Right.
Which is, you know, a pretty terrible number. And, you know, these parents, a lot of them just don't know how to deal with it. And they're thrown by it. And if they go to a PFLAG meeting, it's like a 12-step meeting for parents of lesbian, gay, and transgender youth. They get supported by people who've been through it and know how to help them understand. And I've seen miracles, absolute miracles happen in that group. So.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Everybody can stroll on over to thetrevorproject.org to learn more about the Trevor Project. Any resolutions that you want to share with our listening audience?
Oh, I think you have managed to bring up everything that's important to me pretty much, other than spending time with my family and making sure I will always balance my life out because I have 4 lovely kids. So.
Well, I think that's really important, and I would love to end on that note. I think that that's something that we struggle with often when we're doing this work, Michaela, is that carving out that time. How do you approach making sure that you have that balance between, gosh, being an entrepreneur, being an activist, and being the member of a family?
Well, three of my kids are grown.
Yeah.
They're 23, 29, and 31. The 29-year-old just turned 30 yesterday. So
there you go.
30 and 31. And but now I have my 2-year-old. And we may be, and my partner is wanting a second child. So, you know, and I love kids. I got to tell you, the best part of my life has been being a parent and seeing life through their eyes as they grow. So I do spend a lot of time with my family. So I just work a lot of hours. I don't know how else to do it to balance it. But it's the one thing I want to mention that isn't talked about a lot about transitioning, about the later transitioners, is the effect on the kids. And that is that it is tough for the kids and the spouse, of course, but it is tough on the kids because they're so used to a certain image that that person worked so hard to keep because they were trying to overcome what was inside, that they go through a transition of their own that's pretty difficult for them. And I realized that in my kids, that, you know, how tough it was on them and that they need their support as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Again, yeah. Listeners, stroll on over to thetrevorproject.org. Michaela, I mean, what a great way to start off the year. You are blending having an actual life with a family and doing that quality time with your own day job, which is quite time consuming, with just some really inspired activism. It is the perfect way to start our year, and we thank you.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBT news out there. Again, Happy New Year to all of you. I hope your new year has started out amazingly well. Some exciting news from my end. I actually signed a contract just this week with a literary agent because the book that I've been writing for the past couple of years is all done. And so the idea is to have it in your hands by this summer. It even has a title. The title is Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Internal and External Adventures of a Snarky Gay Jew. That would be me, your host, Ken Schneck. So I'm sure I'll update you on that as it moves forward. But first, let's get to the news out there. This one comes to you from The Advocate. Nationwide marriage equality may be a source of outrage for conservative talking heads and certain Republican presidential candidates, but for the majority of Americans, not so much. In a wide-ranging new online poll on anger, apparently we're doing online polls on anger, and the poll is called American Rage. It's scary. I don't know why that just scares me itself, but there's more, and it's good stuff. It's conducted by Esquire Magazine, NBC News, and SurveyMonkey. Well, in that poll, respondents were shown several imaginary news headlines and asked if the headlines made them very angry, somewhat angry, not so angry, or not angry at all. I would like to again pause here and say this poll is all about anger. So it's not about whether these images made you happy. That's not what it's about. Did the image make you very angry, somewhat angry, not so angry, or not angry at all? The headline, More Than 100,000 Couples Have Wed Since the Supreme Court Ruling, received the highest percentage of not angry at all responses. 60% of those surveyed marked it not angry at all. That was according to the results that were posted this week on Esquire's website. Only 22% said that the headline made them very or somewhat angry. The next highest percentage of not angry at all reactions was for the headline, Caitlyn Jenner's Dream Wedding. 39% of respondents said it did not evoke any anger. However, 25% said it made them very angry, 16% somewhat angry, and 18% not so angry. The angry responses might not all be the result of transphobia, as they could reflect a general aversion to tabloid-style celebrity gossip journalism, and that is noted by the new civil rights movement. By the way, I'm just putting out there that it's possible that some of the folks that were angry with the headline Caitlyn Jenner's Dream Wedding, those very well could have been LGBT individuals. Very well could be. There are a lot of people in the LGBT community not so happy with Caitlyn Jenner. And I will say, on the cover of The Advocate this month, and I have not read it yet, people are responding to the cover, I think without even reading the piece, but the cover is Caitlyn Jenner, and the article is called The Education of Ms. Jenner. I have not yet read it, so we all need to read that together and convene our book club next week, and then we will talk about it. Going back to this poll, the headlines that angered respondents much more were reports of school shootings, police shootings of unarmed black men, fraud committed by business executives, billionaires trying to influence elections, congressional dysfunction, and Bill Cosby being cleared of sexual assault charges. Men were more likely than women to be angry about Caitlyn Jenner's theoretical wedding, 46% versus 35%, and more men were likely to be angry than women about marriage equality, 27% versus 18%. Several other survey questions turned up responses indicating support for LGBT people. The Washington Post noted this, quote, "The social justice issue that garnered the most agreement was LGBT rights." Because there was more on here. One of those items listed several subsets of the population and asked, which of them are treated in a way that makes you angry? 41% of respondents said they were angered. They were angered by the way LGBT people are treated. This was the largest percentage for any population group except blacks. An equal percentage of respondents were angered by the treatment of black people. Respondents could choose as many groups as they wanted to. Putting it in a slightly different way, the pollsters asked which groups had a right to be angry at how they're treated, and 45% said LGBT individuals did. Again, the largest percentage for any group except blacks. 47% thought blacks had a right to be angry. There you go. Another question concerned Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis, our buddy Kim Davis. It concerned her refusal to grant marriage licenses to same-sex couples. 61% opposed her actions, and only 24% supported it. The remainder said they were not sure. Esquire reported this, quote, "A majority of Davis supporters believe the U.S. is no longer the Christian nation it once was. They also believe that the government interfering with people's ability to practice religion is of greater concern than religious groups forcing their beliefs on others." So there you go. You can go over to Esquire magazine, esquire.com, and you can search for that poll. It's called American Rage. They are trying to figure out how angry we are. We need to maybe start doing some polls about what we're happy about. It's one of the courses I'm teaching this semester. I'm teaching a course called Urban Community Life, and we're going to be focused on what in urban community life makes people actually happy. What do people actually love? I just read this amazing book. It has absolutely nothing to do with LGBT issues whatsoever, but I'm just sharing with you my book club recommendations for today. Just read a book called For the Love of Cities. It's quite brilliant. I was inspired by it. If you're living in a city or you're not, you will be inspired by For the Love of Cities. Totally unsolicited book recommendation. There you go. In Oklahoma, this story too comes to you from The Advocate, Oklahoma City passed a housing non-discrimination ordinance which would make it illegal. It would make it illegal to deny housing to LGBT people on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. The law, which goes into effect next month, makes it illegal to deny rental housing, prevent the sale of a house, or refuse to build a home for someone due to sexual orientation or gender identity. The law also protects residents from discrimination on the basis of familial status, disability, race, color, sex, religion, creed, ancestry, or national origin. Debate over the ordinance became heated, according to the television station KFOR, before the council voted 5-4, only one vote there, The council voted 5-4 in favor of this ordinance. One city councilman, Mark Stonecipher, vocally opposed the amendment, wondering aloud, he said this out loud, if discrimination against LGBT people actually existed in the housing sector. He said this, quote, through HUD and the Civil Rights Division of the Attorney General's Office, there should be complaints that are being filed, and there should be empirical evidence of whether we know the answer to that, and I don't think we have it. Resident Cindy Kaysen said her gay son has experienced housing discrimination. She cried while testifying before the council. She said this, quote, our children need the protection in whatever form you can offer them. Councilman Stonecipher expressed fear that the law might interfere with religious freedom. He said this, quote, I want to make sure that we are putting something on the book that doesn't have constitutional implications that may affect the right to contract, freedom of religion, or may affect freedom of speech. As we noted last week, this idea about freedom from religion, that's going to be the next evolution. We're already seeing it state by state by state. That is the next evolution of ordinances that are trying to be run through our political system to discriminate. I mean, I don't really have another way to say it, to codify discrimination in the law books there. The idea that, oh, wait, we cannot infringe on anyone's right to express their religion, and so be it if expressing their religion means denying services to LGBT people, even though that itself is illegal. So that is the next evolution. We are going to see that up, down, and all around. Turning our attention to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court Justice Scalia is once again raising eyebrows. How many times can I say this? I feel if we went back and surveyed all of our news stories over the past 7 years, Justice Scalia, he's going to come up a lot. But here we go. Supreme Court Justice Scalia is once again raising eyebrows, most recently by claiming the Constitution does not require the government to be neutral on religious matters. According to the Associated Press, Scalia also said the United States has been blessed. We've been blessed because we honor God. Speaking at a Catholic high school in Louisiana, the conservative justice told attendees that there is, quote, no place in the Constitution for the idea of separation between church and state. He followed up by saying there was nothing wrong with the president or other government officials evoking God in speeches. He said this, quote, to tell you the truth, there is no place for that in our constitutional tradition. Where did that come from? To be sure, you can't favor one denomination over another, but can't favor religion over non-religion? God has been very good to us. This is all Scalia, not Ken Schneck. Scalia, still going on with his speech here. God has been very good to us. That we won the revolution was extraordinary, which apparently was due to God. The Battle of Midway was extraordinary. I think one of the reasons God has been good to us is that we have done him honor. Unlike the other countries of the world that do not even invoke his name, we do him honor. In presidential addresses, in Thanksgiving proclamations, and in many other ways. There's nothing wrong with that, and do not let anybody tell you there's anything wrong with that. So there you go. That is Supreme Court Justice Scalia, who is setting the groundwork, even though it's already there. He is cementing the groundwork for individuals to take up the claim that, yes, we need to protect the freedom from religion, which is apparently under assault from the LGBT community, which, of course, just to put it out there, the freedom of religion in no way under assault from the LGBT community. In November, just to remind you, Scalia compared LGBT people to child molesters in a statement in support of referendums determining civil rights. He said this, quote, what about child abusers? So should I on the Supreme Court say this is a deserving minority? Nobody loves them. No, if you believe in democracy, you should put it to the people. That would be Justice Scalia of the United States Supreme Court in November comparing LGBT people to child molesters. There you go. There was a heated confrontation this week. If you have not seen it, you got to check this out online. It was between presidential hopeful Ben Carson and an individual who came up to ask him a question. Soft-spoken Republican presidential hopeful Ben Carson, who has been known to whisper that homosexuality is absolutely a choice, he was confronted by a real live gay person of a differing opinion in New York City this week. This individual walked up to Ben Carson. It's really quite remarkable. And she said this, do you think I chose to be gay? And Ben Carson responded, that's a long conversation. And this individual responded, I think you are full of expletive. I can't say that word. Ben Carson does not support marriage equality and called marriage a religious institution in a Facebook post where he was attempting to clarify his statement that sexual orientation was absolutely a choice. However, in that same apology, because he had an apology, the Republican candidate also insisted no studies disproved that theory. Ben Carson is no stranger to controversial opinions, such as his views on evolution. Additionally, he supports the right to discriminate legislation signed earlier this year by Indiana Governor Mike Pence, known as, it's coming up in every story, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. At the right-wing gathering called the Iowa Freedom Summit, Ben Carson explained his views regarding the right to discriminate against same-sex couples seeking a wedding cake. He said this, quote, "What I have a problem with is when people try to force people to act against their beliefs because they say they're discriminating against me, so they can go right down the street and buy a cake, but no, let's bring a suit against this person because I want them to make my cake even though they don't believe in it, which is really not at all that smart because they might put poison in the cake." By the way, that's a neurosurgeon suggesting that anti-gay people, if you insist on getting your cake there, they might put poison in it. We're not even going to go near the fact that his whole argument here, I'm going to read it again. "What I have a problem with is when people try to force people to act against their beliefs because they say they're discriminating against me, so they can go right down the street and buy a cake, but no, let's bring a suit against this person because I want them to make my cake even though they don't believe in it." How Ben Carson is not able to extrapolate this story out to see, hey, I wonder if the same thing could have been said in the 1950s and 60s about people of color. I'm not even going for the irony that Ben Carson is indeed a candidate of color. I'm just saying of any presidential candidate. I am not specifically saying Ben Carson should know better. No way. I'm saying of any presidential candidate, how are you not seeing that that is exactly the same argument that was used by bigoted people, and still, by the way, there's still a lot of racist and bigoted people out there, but this was the argument that was used in the 1950s to deny service to people of color. But Ben Carson and other presidential candidates don't seem to see that irony. Very curious there. This story is from the Wall Street Journal, Stanford University's Business School. I love this story. Stanford University's Business School is offering a leadership program intended to help more gay leaders ascend to the C-suite, to that top echelon of leaders in business. The Graduate School of Business will hold the first Stanford LGBT Executive Leadership Program in late July. The week-long boot camp, hailed as the first of its kind at the university level, will cater to mid-career leaders who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. Participants will undergo personal leadership assessments and get management training, a condensed version of the school's popular Acting with Power course, as well as instruction in design thinking, according to the program's directors, Professor Sarah Sewell and lecturer Thomas Worcester. The course will also address topics like authentic leadership and being open about sexuality at work, which are often thorny workplace issues for gay managers. Dr. Sewell and Worcester initially set out to find a way the business school could advance LGBT business leaders. They canvassed executives. I love this. They canvassed executives and human resources managers who said they wanted executive training offerings for gay managers. So now they have put it together. Companies can nominate employees to apply for the roughly 50 slots in the program, and individuals can also apply. Tuition will be about $12,000, and the ideal candidate, the faculty say, has about 10 years of professional experience and 5 years of management experience. Employers have grown more accommodating of employees who identify as LGBT recently, with employee resource groups and inclusive benefit policies. Yet Apple Inc. Chief Executive Tim Cook, who publicly came out years after he was named chief executive, he is believed to be the only openly gay CEO among the Fortune 500 list of top U.S. companies. So even if you're going with a lowball estimate of 10% of the population is gay, you only have one of 500. I'm not great at math, but I know that one out of 500, not so much 10%, not even 5%. So Tim Cook, believed to be the only openly gay CEO among the Fortune 500 list of top U.S. companies. Joel Simkai, the CEO of Grindr LLC, the gay dating app, he attributes some of his success to his network of LGBT professionals and says that the networking and mentoring in Stanford's program could benefit other business leaders. Very exciting that Stanford University offering a program, the Stanford LGBT Executive Leadership Program. And we have to do stuff like this. We have to do. I mean, how appropriate to cover that story as we welcomed Michaela Mendelsohn earlier in the show. It's this whole idea is, yeah, there's more support that's needed out there. That business world is a whole different world. I am so insulated in my little world of academia. I recognize my privilege. I know that there are many colleges and universities out there where maybe it's not the best possible place to identify as gay. I tend not to work at those places. And I think because it's academia, those places are increasingly in the minority. So I don't really know much about the business world. And everything that I know is, gosh, it's pretty tough to be out and gay and be respected. So kudos to people like Michaela Mendelsohn, and of course to Stanford University, the Stanford LGBT Executive Leadership Program. If you are available in July, I say you apply for it if you're in that mid-career place. Very cool stuff. Very cool stuff. You know, one of my favorite folks out there is Amy Dickinson. She is the woman behind Ask Amy, that syndicated column. She's also on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, my favorite podcast out there, my favorite NPR show. I am just endlessly entertained by Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's often a panelist. I actually was a contestant once on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Amy Dickinson was one of the panelists. And in the course of me appearing on that show, Amy and I discovered that we knew someone in common. Her nephew actually attended the school where I was a dean in Southern Vermont. But she writes some great advice columns out there, and often they have to do with LGBT issues. This is the latest one. Dear Amy, I'm a 14-year-old. My family is pretty much the perfect family, except for their homophobic attitude. This wouldn't be that big of an issue if I was straight, but I'm not. They're always saying things like, GLBT people are disgusting and need to die. I've been putting up with these remarks for a while now, and I'm starting to believe them. I need to talk to someone, but I don't have anyone. We live in a conservative area, so most of my friends are homophobic too. I know this because they express it constantly. I can't put up with them any longer, but I don't have anywhere to go, and I don't want to abandon my life here. Besides the homophobic attitude, everything is great. Do you have any coping tips for getting through the next 3 to 4 years? Signed, Gay but Not Happy. And here's Amy's response. Dear Gay, please check out my fellow advice columnist Dan Savage's groundbreaking project for GLBT youth called It Gets Better, itgetsbetter.org. On the site, you can view hundreds of video testimonials submitted by GLBT people who have survived bullying, harassment, and cruelty, and who don't see themselves as victims, but as survivors and victors. Connecting with other people who have been through this experience is an important and inspiring step for you to take. The site also features hotline numbers for GLBT youth, 1-800-246-7743. So there you go. I love it. Amy Dickinson giving some great advice for LGBT youth out there. There's a story out there put forth by the National Center for Transgender Equality in Florida in a most recent sting operation dubbed, I kid you not, this is an actual thing. In a most recent sting operation in Florida dubbed Operation Naughty, Not Nice, the Polk County Sheriff's Department, in conjunction with Lakeland Police Department, held a 5-day-long undercover investigation in December, focusing on individuals who allegedly advertised prostitution services in online ads. During the operation, undercover detectives responded to ads posted online and arrested a total of 95 suspects, including sex workers, their clients, and others who were arrested for related offenses. Of the 50 charged with prostitution, 4 were specifically identified as a transgender, a transvestite, or transsexual. In addition to outing the trans status of these individuals, I mean, this is what they put out there in a news release, the news release repeatedly misgendered the individuals and published their birth names on the sheriff's website. So just outing there of trans individuals. Despite not having been convicted of a crime, many of these suspects' places of work, previous legal history, and whether they were on public assistance and how much they were reported, all of these are in jeopardy. Although these efforts could have been utilized to focus on individuals' coercive situations like human trafficking, instead the investigation and subsequent reporting of this operation specifically sought out private information about each suspect in an attempt to publicly shame them with little to no regard for their rights, circumstances of the incident, or injury to the party. As said by the National Center for Transgender Equality, this kind of shameful, irresponsible policing and reporting is not new in Polk County. 5 years ago, an individual worked as a caseworker in Central Florida and vividly remembers transgender clients from the clinic where she worked who were arrested in a very similar sting operation orchestrated by Sheriff Grady Judd. The sheriff seems to take tremendous pride in criminalizing people's way of survival and publicly degrading them. A statement by the sheriff on the Polk County website reads this, quote, "We've seen firsthand the negative social costs of how prostitution hurts families, children, and communities, and more often than not, there's a high correlation between other crimes and prostitutions. We see repeat criminal offenders, with criminal arrest histories to include illegal drugs, violent crime, and property crime, and these repeat criminal offenders engage in sex for money. So this article goes on, and I encourage you to check it out. This can be found at the National Center for Transgender Equality, transequality.org, and this is a blog post by Joanna Sefredo. And yeah, this is just putting out there that Operation Naughty Not Nice, just putting information about individuals needlessly online, thus putting them in danger. I mean, it's really putting them in danger. It's jeopardizing the relationships with their family. It's certainly jeopardizing their work history. And these individuals were not convicted of a crime. That's not what happened. It's needless, very needless. So there you go. In China, let's look across the seas to China. A lot's been happening in China lately. A court has accepted China's first same-sex marriage case, lodged by a gay man against a civil affairs bureau for denying him the right to marry, in a decision hailed as a step forward for gay rights there in China. While homosexuality is not illegal in China, and large cities have thriving gay scenes, same-sex marriage is not legal, and same-sex couples have no legal protections. Sun Wenlin, 26 years old, told Reuters, a court in Changsha, the capital of Hunan province, has accepted his lawsuit this week. He said this, quote, "I think from a legal point of view, we should be successful. Our marriage law says there is the freedom to marry and gender equality. These words can be applied to same-sex marriage." Sun said that he filed the lawsuit in December because he wanted to form a family unit with his 36-year-old partner. He said that he tried to register to marry his boyfriend at the Furong District Civil Affairs Bureau in June, but was rejected by an official who told him marriage had to be between a man and a woman. Officials at the Furong District Civil Affairs Bureau could not be reached for comment, and a court official in Furong, where the case will be heard, said the court, quote, "will not comment on cases before they are heard." China is becoming more tolerant of homosexuality, which until 2001 was listed as a mental disorder, but many gay people remain under heavy pressure to stay in the closet. Activists say the court's acceptance of the case was significant and would likely lead to more cases there in China. Maya Wang, a China researcher at New York-based group Human Rights Watch, said this, quote, "In China, courts often reject politically sensitive cases, so the fact that the lawsuit is accepted signals some official willingness to address discrimination against LGBT people, which is encouraging, but we will need to see if they actually win the case. If they do, it would truly be a watershed moment for LGBT rights in China." So a lot happening in China, the first ever challenge to marriage equality just accepted by a court in China. Hopefully more on that to come. That story comes to you from the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, filed by Sui Li Wei from Reuters. There's a great profile over on advocate.com right now of Tim Campbell. Longtime Twin Cities gay activist Tim Campbell, known for his attention-grabbing tactics and clashes with politicians, has died. He was 76 years old. Campbell died December 26th at a hospice in Houston, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reports. He had suffered from an aggressive form of esophageal cancer. He founded the Twin Cities LGBT newspaper GLC Voice in 1979, and he served as its editor until abruptly closing the paper in 1992. It was not a profitable venture. Campbell once said he earned a starving on the publication. He also was frequently quoted in other media, as he was one of the few openly gay men who would speak to reporters on LGBT issues in the 1980s. He was also a confrontational activist, according to the Minneapolis paper. He nearly came to blows with Minneapolis Mayor Barbara Carlson on several occasions, and he had conflicts with Alan Speer, a gay state senator, who objected to Campbell's approach. Speer said this in a 1986 article, quote, "I know there are those who think he makes the rest of us look more moderate, but the truth is he makes it difficult for everyone in the gay and lesbian community who are trying to work responsibly." There was often a touch of humor in Campbell's activism and sometimes a bit of a threat. The Star Tribune reported this, quote, "Unafraid of public spectacle, he once brought a cream pie to an AIDS task force meeting. He dressed as a campy Lady Liberty to protest the Reverend Jerry Falwell and set a fire in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department to protest the handling of gay issues." His longtime friend Dean Amundsen told the paper, quote, "He was the queen of guerrilla theater. I have to tell you, nothing makes me smile more. I love that there was a queen of guerrilla theater. Guerrilla theater has its place in activism, my listeners. It absolutely has its place in activism. But Campbell was also a serious activist. He partnered with early marriage equality advocates Jack Baker and Michael McConnell, who managed to obtain a legal marriage license in Minnesota in 1971 to conduct sensitivity training on LGBT issues for students, police, social service agencies, and businesses. And he lobbied for the media to use the terms gay and lesbian instead of homosexual. That was huge. That was really, really big. Tim Campbell was a native of Kansas who grew up in Texas. He taught at the University of Minnesota Morris County campus in the early 1970s. About 10 years ago, he returned to Texas where he was an activist within his retirement community. Can I just say that phrase again? Where he was an activist within his retirement community. Amundsen, his friend, told the paper this, quote, "He had a caring, gentle side to him, very nurturing. He wanted to be loved and love other people." That is Tim Campbell, an amazing gay activist. He died at 76 years old. And last but not least, we're looking over the seas again to Ireland. Ireland's Labour Party is feeling heat because of a draft newspaper advertisement that depicts two leaders of rival political parties as a happily married same-sex couple. The photoshopped ad, as reported by the Irish Mirror, imagines Gerry Adams and Michael Martin as bridegrooms. So they're two leaders, political leaders there in Ireland. They hold hands, wear matching suits, and cut a wedding cake outside Leinster House, the seat of government in Ireland. Their faux wedding includes several other well-known Irish politicians. The ad's text says this, quote, "This is one marriage we should vote no to this year. Vote Labour for a stable and balanced government." The text plays off Ireland's historic popular vote in favor of marriage equality last year. So that is a draft of an ad using same-sex marriage as a way to get your point across. That's interesting. A source in the Labour Party told the Irish Mirror that the ad was aimed at making a serious point in a humorous way. That point, the source told the paper, was to show a clear choice on election day for the populace there in Ireland. It's a fun picture to check out. I highly encourage you to go check out. Controversial attack ad portrays Irish politicians as gay couple. It's not really that well photoshopped, by the way. This is not by a talented individual who created this, but it's still interesting to look at, so check that out. We gay people were being used in attack ads, as we, you know, often are. The Advocate has a list of their 40 under 40. I encourage you to check that out. I love it. I love every year when this list comes out. You do not have to be of a certain age to make a difference in this world. And the 40 under 40 reminds us of that. So it's a great thing. It's a great thing. Our huge, huge thanks to Michaela Mendelson. What an absolute treat having her on the show. Please, everybody, go check out the Trevor Project. This isn't just a nonprofit. This is a nonprofit that can potentially save lives. Stroll on over to thetrevorproject.org. They have a hotline there that you should know the number of, and you should give it out to other people, because we still have individuals, as we saw in the Ask Amy column, we have individuals who really need these resources. So stroll on over and check out thetrevorproject.org. You guys, I encourage you to start out your year amazingly well. Get out there and use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. This is your year. This is your year to get out there and figure out what's the best way for me to use my voice. You know what it is. I don't know what it is. For me, it's doing this radio show and teaching my classes and writing a book that hopefully gets published. For you, it's something else. It's writing a letter to the editor. It's hosting a movie night. It's looking into what the school policies are in your area. It's what you do best. Go embrace it. It will make a difference, and it will make you feel amazing. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
All the girls in the Paris night, all the girls in the pale moonlight, all the girls with a shopping bag, all the girls with a washing